We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle Podcast. I'm Sammy Jacobs. Along with us will be TJ Inman. And today we're breaking down Indiana's 33-28 loss at home to Penn State. What we liked, what we didn't like, what worked, didn't, and what needs to improve going forward. We'll talk about the injury to Michael Penix, and we'll talk about a whole lot more. And preview the game heading into Minnesota. But first, I do want to pass along a big congratulations to Purdue and the Tyler Trent story. If you don't know the Tyler Trent story, is a young man battling cancer, and he predicted that Purdue win on Saturday night, and he was on the sideline all bundled up. So even though we don't like Purdue, we don't like Ohio State either. It was a very cool scene up in West Lafayette to give this this young man just a little bit of joy in an otherwise tough life. But now we welcome in TJ Inman. TJ, happy Monday. It's finally starting to feel like fall, maybe a little too much winter right now. But how are you doing on this Monday?
Yeah, I'd second your feelings. It was a cool scene there, and a good job by Purdue. You know, that was no fluke. They beat Ohio State, every which way but loose, and thoroughly deserved that victory. So congrats to them, and certainly no no sorrow on our part for Ohio State. We put out the bowl projections time, and I had certainly penciled in Ohio State in kind of my mocks as I led up to the first article as a college football playoff team. Obviously, that game, that performance, and that result, forced me to change that, and I've got the Michigan Wolverines in there now as the college football playoff representative from the Big Ten. Certainly still plenty of season to go, but that was definitely a huge result in the conference.
Yeah, it definitely was. It shook up the whole Big Ten race and really makes it kind of more fun to see, the big dogs go down. And now you have Michigan, looking like the favorites in the conference in the East. And then it's anybody, the battle between them coming down to that last game of the season, probably. And then, in the West, you have Iowa, who's having a special season, it's shaping up to be. And they might come out of the West, and you have either an Ohio State or a Michigan, Iowa, Big Ten championship game. And the West is wide open as well. You have Northwestern. Has only one loss in the conference. Purdue has, is playing well in the conference, has one loss to Northwestern to open the year. You have Wisconsin, who it's still Wisconsin, but, they've struggled to beat Michigan and look to be human as well. So there's going to be two good races in both divisions, which if you're a Big Ten college, football fan, it's all you could ask for. But let's get down to IU, or an IU specific site. But we always love talking Big Ten and the national scene. But IU, coming off a really really disappointing, discouraging loss to Iowa the week before. Came out with some fight against Penn State, hung in there, had a lead for all of 20 seconds there late in the game in the third quarter. And you know, just couldn't make the plays on special teams to get there. They lose 33-28. What did you like about the game on Saturday, and what really needs to improve going forward if IU's going to make a bowl run?
Yeah, I thought that the defense let's start at the very beginning here. One of our primary questions coming into the game was, how would Indiana respond? They had a players-led meeting after that Iowa game. How would they look? Overall, I think you can say they responded positively. That was a much better performance and effort than what we saw against the Hawkeyes. That's a plus. I thought the defense played well enough to win. I know that the points amount given up was more than what you'd prefer, but
I don't put
a lot of that on them.
They handed Penn State 21 points. I believe three of their touchdown drives were under 40 yards. You had the opening kickoff was returned to the IU 36. They scored a touchdown on that. You had the kickoff returned to the five or six yard line for 94 yards. They punched it in the next play, and the fumble by Ronnie Walker set him up with great field position as well. So you'd really like to see this defense hold them to field goals there and give the offense a shot to come back instead of allowing touchdowns. But it is a young defense, and those points, they're earned because Penn State earned them. They just got set up, and this is what – why IU's special teams rank is just abysmal. Probably I haven't seen the new S&P Plus rankings on the special teams yet, but you see these explosive plays on kick return, and then you see IU's kick return, and it's just, man, it's not there's nothing there. They fair catch the ball, which is probably the best outcome. The last two times Mike Majette has returned a kick, he's gotten it out maybe to the 20. They haven't had a return past the 40 in years, probably since at least last year, if not before that. They haven't had a touchdown return since, I believe, 2012. It's just an area where you've assigned a coach now as a special teams coordinator. It's his sole job, and they cannot just be this bad. And some of that falls on your kicker, too. It was a windy day, and it got windier, and it was windy down on the field. I was down on the field the entire game, and it got downright cold there in the fourth quarter. But Penn State's kicker had no problem putting that ball at or near the end zone. Jared Smoller, it looked like they were fielding at the 10-yard line. Or the 5-yard line and coming out, and low line drive kicks too, which you can't have against a team with the athletes that Penn State has. So, maybe Jared Smoller needs to evaluate where his leg is at, and then the coaching staff has to evaluate, hey, maybe he's not getting the job done. Maybe we have to go to a Charles Campbell for the last four games of the year on kickoffs, or use Logan Justice on kickoffs and Charles Campbell on field goals and things like that to save guys' legs, because you cannot. And it happened at critical times. The opening kickoff where you think, oh, right, everybody's fired up. Bam, 50-some-odd yards down to the 36. You take the lead and have all the momentum.
Yeah.
All you need to do is tackle the guy and give your defense a chance to shut him down, get the ball back and extend the lead, and one gets broken for 94 yards. It's just at critical times, and I get fans' frustrations because you can't even enjoy it. You can't get up and cheer it. You can't get up and cheer the defense and things like that before, in the blink of an eye, it's gone. And I understand the fans' frustration on that, and you know, the rest is history. But that special teams, they also ran into the kicker, although it worked out beautifully for IU. The 5-yard penalty, Penn State then faked the next punt, and it got stuffed on a great tackle by Peyton Hendershot. And so, you know, they kind of lucked into that. But, you know, that penalty, you had a fumble by Jay Sean Harris on a punt return where it's a windy day, just fair, you know, fair catch, it bounced. And just go down. I know you're trying to make a play and things like that. Just go down. And then you had bad turnover luck with Penn State muffing, I think, three or four punts and falling on top of it. And then, you know, you did run, you know, get a great recovery on the onside kick there late in the game. But special teams, it can't be awful. You could be a middle of the road special teams. You got to do something. You don't have to be a top five special teams team to win, but a team like Indiana, who's middle of the road on offense, middle of the road on defense in terms of total offense and total defense, they really need to be at least middle of the road on special teams. And right now, they're bad.
Yeah, I just the only thing I'd add to that, I don't know why Mike Majette is the guy they have returning kicks, but I just don't understand that. I don't think he's particularly explosive. I don't think he's a threat to make any kind of a play back there. I guess he hasn't fumbled one, so there's a positive, I suppose. I don't know. I don't understand that. But, you know, I thought the defense played well, and that's a positive. Offensively, you know, really interesting. Not a bad day for the offense.
And they put up 500 and
pretty good defense.
500 some yards.
Yeah, and you know what's odd about it for me is that I'm left feeling like IU certainly left some points on the field because they did. I mean, they you know, we could discuss the end of the half that was botched, we'll say. Going for it on fourth down, I didn't have a problem with that. Actually, I prefer that call. I understand the thought behind kicking it. I don't mind Indiana going for it there. I thought that the play call was ridiculous.
Well, it was
–
Tom Allen said after the game that it was not supposed to be snapped, and I believe Hunter Littlejohn was the center on that. It wasn't supposed to be snapped. They were either going to call timeout, draw him offsides, and then either come out with a new play or kick it. And you got to think they're going to kick it. You got to go into that half turn. Now it worked out in the grand scheme of things. You got the ball back with about a minute and 50 seconds left at their 40. So there's like no harm,
and
no foul.
That up too.
And then they messed that up. You know, I don't put that on Penix on hiking the ball. He was shocked that he actually got the ball and just threw it up to one of his playmakers, which is, you know, probably what you're taught to do. But and a better ball if he throws a catchable ball there, I semi catchable ball or somebody in the hands with it instead of airmailing it, they probably, I don't want to say probably because it's Big Ten officials, but they might be more likely to get a flag if you throw it to where maybe it goes off the receiver's hands or helmet or something like that. But that's asking a lot out of the Zebras on that play, who were, you know, missed a lot of calls on the line of scrimmage there. But that play, and then, you know, the situation, they get the ball back, that about a minute 50 left. You bring Peyton Ramsey back in. He said coming off the field that they brought him in for game management purposes, and they totally bungled that.
Whoops.
And one of the reasons that, you know, Peyton Ramsey, he's a fighter, and you got to like that about him. But you saw it at the end of the game, too. he can't throw these 15-yard outs, which are essential in these two-minute drill situations. You got to get yards, and you got to get out of bounds. So if they want to move the ball downfield, they throw it to the middle of the field and just hope you get a first down and it stops the clock momentarily. But you got to get out of bounds. Nobody did. They tried to rush the field goal team on, and you need about 10 seconds to do it if the clock's not stopped. To set up from I think it was 40 or so yards the kick would have been, you need about somewhere between 7 and 10 seconds, and they just couldn't get it done. They had two chances to tie that game, maybe even take the lead. And those are the plays that infuriate this fan base and you know, make you scratch your head and say, you know, maybe Tom Allen's in over his head a little bit with these situations. And maybe it's his second year as a head coach in the Power Five team. And, you know, there's going to be a learning curve. That's what's going to happen. And Tom Allen Kevin Wilson wasn't great in these situations either. He was not the greatest game manager in the world, at least according to all the people on Twitter from a couple of years ago complaining about the same stuff. But, you know, you needed to get at least 3 points there. You go into the halftime, you know, tied, getting the ball back and things like that. But what I don't get is why are you putting Ramsey back in when Penix was playing so well, and now that it's revealed that he's had an ACL tear and he's out for the rest of the season, that, you know, that argument's out the window. We need to find another talking point. But he couldn't have done worse.
No, he couldn't have. I mean, you bring in Peyton Ramsey for supposed game experience that he had in the 2 minute offense, and that's fine, but he made a poor decision to throw the pass where he did, and then, you know, then the receiver didn't get out of bounds, and then you attempt to, at that point, it didn't matter if you ran on the field goal unit or not. They weren't going to get another playoff. That was pretty clear to me. So that was poor. I think the offensive line had a fantastic day. They deserve a lot of credit because they've been rightfully criticized for some of their performances. They've had kind of an odd season. They've been really good in a couple of games, and they've been pretty poor in a couple of games as well. But against Penn State, who has a pretty good front, their linebackers are young, and I don't think they're all that skilled outside of Micah Parsons, who's playing, outside of his preferred position of defensive end. And he's talented, but, you know, he's a freshman. But Indiana's offensive line really controlled that game when Indiana had the ball. I thought that they, pass-blocking-wise, they were good. Run blocking, they were outstanding, particularly the left side of the line. Indiana was able to consistently run behind left tackle, left guard, and center and pick up large chunks of yardage. Ronnie Walker had a couple of nice runs. He had a bad fumble, but he had a couple of nice runs. Stevie Scott was really a beast all afternoon and continues to be an impressive player. So the line had a really good day. It's too bad we don't get to see any more of Penix. That was a shot in the arm that I think was, you know, tangibly felt. It just popped off the screen that, it's a little different with this guy in there. And I'm already looking forward to seeing that next season because there's just a different level of excitement there.
There was a palpable buzz in the stadium when he came out.
That being said, he was not perfect by any means, and I'm not expecting that, you know, in the limited game action he's had. I mean,
he hasn't played in over a month.
Right. When you say, well, when you get to this point in the season, you're freshmen or no longer freshmen. Well, they are if they've barely played. And that's the case with him. Now, you know, we can have an argument at the end of the season, and I'm sure we will, maybe not an argument, probably a discussion, because I feel like we're on the same point or the same wavelength here about the way that it was handled earlier in the season, putting you in this position now. That being said, it ends up working out as a positive long term because, you know, he's still going to keep that red shirt. And that's good for the long-term future, but I don't think any of us particularly care too much about that right now. It's a major bummer that he's not going to be there. But, you know, looking to Iowa's or looking to Friday's game against Minnesota, that's a team you can run on. And Indiana's offensive line is going to have to they're going to have to do what they did against Penn State. And, you know, they were dominant, and they deserve credit for that. I thought to single out a defensive player, I thought Brian Fitzgerald had himself a very nice game. I thought Marcelino Ball played much better than he did against Iowa. Those two were all over the field making plays. That was good to see. And Indiana's secondary, really, I know the wind played a part in this, but Trace McSorley was not particularly effective through the air. He hurt IU with his legs, but, you know, Indiana did as well as you could expect offense. And then the running game was very good as well. It was just the special teams, really poor play. And then, a fumble here and there that the ball just consistently bounced right to Penn State. That's I don't know what to say about that. I don't believe in curses, but my gosh, that's just the way it goes. It really, you keep saying, oh, it's, you know, it's 50-50 and eventually that'll flip. Well, I don't know when, because I'm still waiting.
Yeah. And you know, credit does go to the offensive line, and yeah, they were called for like 6 holding penalties and they let up exact.
A couple of those straight up crap. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
They were crap. They got trucked on a couple of occasions, particularly in the interior. Wes Martin, you know, he got run over by the guy he's trying to block, falls over. Of course, the guy falls over on top of him. That doesn't make it holding. It just does not. Indiana had multiple first downs taken away because of that. They just missed those calls. They just did. Now, a couple, Indiana definitely held, no doubt. But I mean, a few of those were on the replay very clearly. Penn State defender did not get held. They just didn't. And they were missed calls. I'm sure you won't hear a word from that from the Big Ten, but that's reality.
Yeah, and you mentioned that they wiped out first downs. A lot of them were big first downs. There was, a couple plays in their territory where – you're getting the offense going, and the offense ran 100 plays, and that doesn't include the penalty plays, I don't think. And then if you get first downs, this team could have run 115 plays, probably. And that's the difference in the game. There's those 15 plays on that ball, and Penn State wouldn't. So it was a good effort against Penn State. Disappointing results. But it kind of gives you a tease that if they play like this, they should be able to beat the competition that they need to beat to go to a bowl game. So moving on to Minnesota, if IU fans don't know, the game is on Friday night, not Saturday, although it could bleed into Saturday since it's an 8 p.m.
Yeah.
Friday night start on FS1. Up at Minnesota. This is a game that IU hasn't played Minnesota since 2013. And that was a debacle of a game, a homecoming debacle, another one that year with a terrible play call as IU was just running it down Minnesota's road to throw a backwards pass that went for a fumble. And and that drive and probably killed it. Well, it did kill IU hopes that year. So, and before that, the last time they played was 2008 up in the old Metrodome, which was just, it wasn't even a cool place to go to as a fan, other than that your ears popped when you walked in. But up at Minnesota, outdoors, it looks like IU's going to luck out on the weather. It's supposed to be in the 50s, not blizzarding or anything like that, which could happen up in Minnesota in the last week of October. But this is a very evenly matched game. Minnesota comes in ranked 11th in total offense. Indiana's ranked 7th there on total defense. Minnesota comes in at 10th. Indiana's at 7th. Scoring defense, Minnesota's at 10. IU's at 11. They're actually tied, or Minnesota's actually 0.2 points ahead of Indiana in that category. In scoring offense, Indiana is half a point better at 9th in the Big Ten. Minnesota sitting at 10th. So it is a very, very evenly matched game, to where if Indiana comes out with the intensity that they did against Penn State, fixes the special teams errors, and plays offense and defense like they did last week, they should come out of Minnesota and Minneapolis with a win. If they play like they did against Iowa, they're going to get their butts handed to them. And your season is likely in the tank at 4-5 coming home to play Maryland after the open week. But Minnesota has their questions as well. They have lost 4 in a row after winning the first 3. They narrowly beat Fresno State at home. Antoine Winfield Jr. made a heck of a play to seal that game with the pick in the end zone as Fresno State was going in for the tie. They beat New Mexico State 48-10 and Miami of Ohio 26-3. Other than that, they got trounced at Maryland. They got trounced by Iowa. They put up a good fight at Ohio State 30-14. And then got beat up by Nebraska 53-28 for Nebraska's first win of the year. So it's a team that's on a 4-game losing streak. India comes in on a 3-game losing streak. So somebody's losing streak is going to end on Friday night. And Minnesota has their questions. Their quarterback, Zach Ennickstead, was reportedly hospitalized after the game on Saturday. His availability is unknown. Tanner Morgan, the backup, came in, played pretty well, kind of gives Minnesota a different look, but they're missing the top two running backs who are now probably out for the year. They're missing Antoine Winfield Jr. Their secondary is absolutely decimated there. So it's going to be a dogfight, and if Indiana comes out and plays well, they should win, and that'll, you know, going into the open week 5-4 makes you feel a little bit better about yourself.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're offered the chance to be 5-4 heading into a, you know, basically entire 2-week layoff to prepare for Maryland to give you a chance to, you know, a home game to go to a bowl, if offered that, I take it. Do I think Indiana could have and should have beaten one of Michigan State or Penn State? Yes, I do. Am I very disappointed in how they played against Iowa? Yes, I am. But you know what? Iowa is really good. And they deserve credit for how they handled Indiana. But IU played like crap that game. All those things said, you know, if offered the scenario of 5-4, heading into the Maryland game, which is a home game to go to a bowl game, I take it. I do. And that's what Indiana has in front of them. IU should be able to run the ball very well. The question is going to be, can the offensive line repeat the performance that they had? I don't know. You know, we're going to find out. This team has not, over the years, been a team that you feel like you can trust to put out consistently solid performances on the road in the Big Ten. And that's, you know, that gives you pause, but I feel like the offensive line is a proud group that kind of found their footing, getting Coy Cronk back and healthy. And they look really good on Saturday. And Stevie Scott, I believe we have seen enough from him to know what we're getting there. And that's a player that doesn't look like he'd be any fun to go against. And, you know, like I said, Minnesota's a defense that can be had there. Peyton Ramsey's going to have the potential. You know, the plays are going to be there. He's going to have to make them. And I hope he's up to the task because, like you said, Michael Penix, not available. You know, so it's going to be on Peyton's shoulders, and hopefully he can get that done. On defense, we'll see. You know, Minnesota's passing game, not scary. They have a couple of – they have one good wide out, a couple of others that are, you know, potentially dangerous, but not the same level of explosive player that Indiana's gone up against here with some Big Ten East opponents. And then, you know, their running game, like you said, Brooks and Smith, both gone for the year. At this point, they've gotten a couple of good performances from their backs, but they're going to try to rely on that running game. Indiana has at times done pretty well against running backs, and at times they've looked really shaky. I thought Miles Sanders could have had a really nice day, but Penn State didn't really feed him much, which I thought was kind of surprising. But I felt like they could have given him a few more chances than what they did. But, you know, I think it's going to be really interesting. I do think Indiana needs to stop screwing up on special teams. That just has to stop. They are backbreaking plays. Put your defense in a terrible position or just, you know, basically hand points to the opponent. And IU, they just can't do that. They're not a good enough team to be that weak in one facet of the game and expect to get away with it. So I do think it's an even matchup for the most part, but I think that Indiana's running backs, particularly Scott and Walker, are better than what Minnesota has. I think IU overall has a better group of receivers. I think Indiana has the better offensive line in this matchup. And I think Peyton Ramsey is overall a better player than what Minnesota will put forward at quarterback. Not by a ton, but I would take Ramsey over what Minnesota has. I'm going to take the Hoosiers to win this game. I do think that they'll be able to score points on this Minnesota defense, which is pretty beat up. And if you look at their recent results, they did do pretty well against Ohio State, but they gave up a ton of yards. In terms of points, they did well, but, I mean, a whole lot of yards given up. And then Nebraska did whatever the heck they wanted to on Saturday, and Iowa did the same to them before that. So it's a defense that I think is there for the taking. I'm going to go Hoosiers winning it on the road in Minnesota, 34-20. I'd like Indiana to come out and build a lead, and I think Indiana's going to win this game and get themselves to 5-4. But to be honest, if I could tell you that I felt extremely confident about that, I would be lying. I really don't have any strong confidence in any outcome here. I think it's going to be really interesting because both teams desperately need this one.
Yeah, and you talked about Peyton Ramsey, and Reese Taylor now slides into that backup quarterback role, and it was hinted today that they have a package for him. If people have Reese Taylor, he is a dynamic player. He's put offense, defense, special teams for IU. This year he has 283 all-purpose yards, 23 catches. He needs to get the ball in his hand more. They've looked to add him to throw on wide receiver sweeps, double passes, things like that. But him taking snaps, it really could expand the offense, make that defense think about something else. And you saw the Penn State defense when Penix is in, compared to Ramsey, it was basically a different game plan with him in compared to Ramsey. And you'd have to think that, you know, Minnesota knows that, hey, Reese Taylor's playing. They've you know, seen his high school tape as Mr. Indiana football and all those things. So they know what he could do on the field, and he's shown that he could be a pretty good player at the Big Ten level too as a freshman. So, you know, how he impacts the game is going to be really important. Can he give IU's offense the same spark that Michael Penix did last Saturday before leaving with an injury? We'll see what happens with the Minnesota quarterback, Zach Anakstead, who's the starter, who's been the starter all year, has completed 52% of his passes, 9 touchdowns, thrown 7 picks. Tanner Morgan, the primary backup, has been, you know, he hasn't been as he completes more passes, is more of like a Peyton Ramsey type of guy. He can run a little bit, but he hasn't thrown a touchdown. And he's thrown 2 picks. Minnesota also likes to go with the Wildcat. They have a big wide receiver, Seth Green. He's number 17. He's only thrown 3 passes, but in the running game, he's scored 6 times, and that's huge. He's run the ball 38 times. They usually bring him in goal line situations. If Anakstead's not playing, they might play him more. He's scored 6 times. He's their go-to guy in the red zone. He leads all their rushers with those 6 touchdowns. You know, and if IU could stop their freshman running backs and Muhammad Ibrahim and Bryce Williams, who have combined for almost 800 yards and 4 touchdowns, their offense becomes one-dimensional. They do have a couple good receivers on this team in Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman. Bateman's a big, big guy. He's a guy they like to throw it up to. Tyler Johnson as well is a big receiving target at 6'2", 200 pounds. He's by far their most targeted receiver, 705 yards. He's one of the better receivers in the Big Ten as well. So Minnesota does have some weapons. And then on defense as well, they've got some playmakers on defense. And Cashman, he's all over the field. When you watch Minnesota, he's a name everybody talks about. 10.5 tackles for loss. He's a senior linebacker. You know he wants to get that home win before he graduates, give these fans something to cheer about. And then you have a couple other guys. Thomas Barber, a linebacker, he's a good player. Kamal Martin, who got banged up last week at linebacker. So this defense's strength is at linebacker. Defensive back is young. They got burned by Nebraska. They're going to want to come out and play their best game as well. So it could come down to special teams. And IU's got to do something, as you said, TJ. But we'll see. Emmett Carpenter is one of the better kickers in the Big Ten. He's kind of fallen off since he had a great sophomore year in 2016. But, you know, they're always been pretty good on special teams. Their punter is averaging 42 yards a kick. And, you know, we'll see what IU could do. But this is a very winnable game for IU in terms of this is what you want, an evenly matched game where you have a shot. If IU plays their A game, they're going to win. And that's up to the coach on a short week to get going and do. It's an odd start date Tom Allen is not a fan of these Friday night games. He believes it's a high school football night, and I know a lot of people agree with him in terms of IU fans, and I get it. Although I grew up with high school football on Saturdays, I understand it. I don't mind it being on. I think it's a great opportunity for IU to be on national television on Friday night before Halloween weekend to get that the festivities kicked off. So, you know, I'm going to take IU. I think they responded well to Coach Allen. Their effort was very, very good coming out of there on Saturday. I'm going to go 28-24 IU. I don't think IU can score 30 points with Peyton Ramsey, but IU's offensive line. And then if they do get out to a big lead, they can sit on it like they did at Rutgers. So we'll see. I'm going to take IU on a close victory in Minnesota. And, you know, it's a game. This is a absolute must win game for Indiana if they want to go to a bowl game and keep that goal alive. And I know people poo on the six wins. If they could get the six wins, keep this recruiting class intact, go to a bowl game, even if it's in Detroit, you've got a little bit of momentum going into next year, especially if Pennix is able to be semi participating in spring practice, because then you know you have a very good class coming in. You've been to three bowls in 4 years, so this game is huge for IU and hopefully the fan base and the players and the coaches and everybody realizes that just, you know, as big as these games are against these big teams in the Big Ten East, the matchup games that determine whether or not you go to a bowl, and this is the game that IU just has to have if you want to play in the postseason.
Yep, 100% agree with that. It's a big one, no doubt.
Yep. All right. That does it for tonight's podcast. A reminder, the game does kick off Friday night at 8 o'clock Eastern on Fox Sports 1. If you have DirecTV, that is channel 219. I'd like to thank TJ for joining me every week. Come back to HoosierHuddle.com for all your Indiana football news. Check us out on Twitter as well, at Hoosier_Huddle. One final game for October. Then we have the open week before Maryland comes to town on November 10th. It is almost November, which is kind of scary at how the year flies. But thank you for listening. Enjoy the rest of your Monday night and stay warm.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
The NBA Finals are heating up. Looking for hot takes on all the postseason action? The Old Man and the Three, presented by BMW, is the podcast to listen to for the ultimate finals coverage. Host and former NBA sharpshooter J.J. Redick not only has a plugged-in perspective on the action from his time in the league, but he's also announcing the games in real time for ESPN. J.J. has the ultimate insider point of view, and he's taking you along for the ride as he breaks down the best defensive schemes, dunks, and drives from each game. And speaking of incredible drives, there's no better place to tune into your new favorite podcast, The Old Man and the Three, than in a standard-setting BMW. Luxury meets power to create a wholly new driving experience. Push the limits this NBA season with the brand that set the ultimate standard, BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.